You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. Stories of crime, punishment, and salvation are as old as humankind. But few are as disturbing as the 18th century practice of suicide by proxy, an act where people, often women, committed murder to secure religious redemption before execution and ensure their path to heaven. This historical horror is vividly brought to life in The Devil's Bath, a new film by Austrian filmmakers Veronika Vons and Severin Fiala. The movie's based on the meticulous research of UC Davis historian Kathy Stewart, author of Suicide by Proxy in Early Modern Germany, Crime, Sin, and Salvation. Today, we're joined by Kathy Stewart and the filmmaking duo Veronika Franz and her nephew Severin Fiala. Tomorrow, the trio will host a panel discussion about The Devil's Bath at the Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm Museum of Art in UC Davis, and a separate screening of the film at Crues Hall at UC Davis. And just a note, the museum is a financial supporter of Cap Radio. Kathy, Veronika, Severin, welcome to Insight.
Hello.
Hey.
Kathy, you wrote the book that inspired this film. It's called Suicide by Proxy in Early Modern Germany. What is the practice of suicide by proxy, and why did it become a phenomenon in early modern Europe?
So suicide by proxy is the practice where people who are deeply depressed and want to put an end to their life are looking for a way out ending up in hell, without earning eternal damnation, which is something that all Christian denominations taught. So if you're suicidal, you're in a bind. What are you going to do? Either you continue your horrible suffering on earth, or you end your life and end up in hell and your suffering is eternal. So suicide by proxy is a loophole, if you will, where people committed a capital crime then immediately run to the authorities after they have committed the crime and confess to the crime and essentially demand their execution, which authorities are required to give them because that is the requirement of the Decalogue, a divine right law, blood for blood, authorities must execute. So that, and the form typically was the murder of a young child, because the idea was that the child was in a state of innocence and would go to heaven, and so would you as the killer, because you could confess your sin and receive absolution and therefore enter heaven cleansed of your sin.
So how prevalent was this? Was this a freak thing, or was this almost common practice?
This was not a freak thing. So Veronika and Severin are from Vienna. And three chapters of my book are about Vienna, and I showed that there were about 95 cases within a century. So imagine that. Imagine if in Sacramento there were such a child murder every year. It's essentially the equivalent of that, right? So it was very common. I also showed that for Hamburg, and in German-speaking Central Europe, I identified a total of approximately 400 cases.
Veronika, Severin, let's talk about you. Your films are known for chilling narratives and slow builds of psychological tension. How did this creative partnership begin? Veronika, let's start with you.
our partnership with Kathy, like concerning this movie?
We'll get to that, but let's talk about how you began working with your nephew, right, Severin?
Okay, yeah, that that's a fun story, actually, because he used to be the babysitter of my children, and I, like, that was almost, I don't know, 20 years ago, even longer, 25 years ago.
We keep saying 20 years ago, but nowadays it's, I think, even 30 years ago.
And so he was very much into movies, and he grew up in the countryside, and I was in Vienna. So he wanted to come to the city over weekend and watch as many videos back then as possible. And that's how I would pay him for his babysitter duties. And so we started watching movies together and found out that we basically like the same movies.
And those were horror movies. Those were movies that were unsettling and maybe less mainstream.
I mean,
Or
unsettling, yes, but not specifically horror movies. We watch everything, like, and that's how we see our own films as well. So they're not specifically one genre, but I think they're challenging to Austrians and talk about themes or subject matters that are sort of dark and challenging to whoever wants to open up to those subject matters. And I think that's the same for us. We're looking for films that challenge us as the human beings we are.
so we watched like from Friday the 13th to John Cassavetes or Robert Bresson, to mention a famous French director. So like we are interested in good movies.
Well, which one of you discovered Kathy Stewart's research, and what was your first reaction to it?
Yeah, actually, I accidentally stumbled across like this episode of This American Life where Kathy talked about this loophole in history, and we were totally baffled because, like as she mentioned, there were lots of cases like in Vienna in our hometown, and we had never heard about this. And that was like the first thing was like, why don't we know about that? And then we contacted Kathy, and she shared all those cases, and that strengthened our interest even more because, like, what we discovered is that those interrogation transcripts, they felt really modern to us. Like people got a voice that you usually don't know about, like throughout history, because history is not really interested in those ordinary people, not interested in the history of women. So this was sort of a treasure where we really could hear the voices of people who usually don't have any in history.
Let's bring it back to Kathy Stewart. Kathy, why don't you think this practice, this horrific practice, was isn't more well known? How did it become more of a forgotten footnote in history before you wrote your book?
So, this relates to a kind of hot topic for historians, which is the question of history and memory. So we're not only concerned with what actually happened, but how subsequent ages understand the past and change how they understand the past for their own comfort and convenience. So the practice of suicide by proxy, I argue, was swept under the rug because it was deeply disconcerting to the public in the early 19th century when this practice really came to an end. And what was really disturbing was that so many of the perpetrators were women, and the idea that women had this level of agency, albeit a self-destructive agency, was something that was unacceptable to new gender norms and a new understanding of what women were. And then, secondly, the idea that the state for over 200 years or 150 years was essentially impotent to suppress this practice was also deeply disturbing to bureaucrats in the 19th century. And so the reading public doesn't want to hear this. Bureaucrats don't want to hear this after 1800. And so it gets swept under the rug. And I have dug it back out from under the rug.
I'll pose the question to Veronica and Severin, but Kathy, I'd first like to get your thoughts. Why do you think that your research and your book has struck a chord with modern audiences? Why is it resonant in today's times?
That's really a good, I mean, that's an excellent question, because I do find that whenever I tell anybody about this, even, the whole time that I've been researching it, people are absolutely fascinated by the project, perhaps because, it's so tragic because the perpetrators, one has a certain level of empathy for the perpetrators and the horrible fate that they are experiencing, and the kind of iron cage that they are locked in this system. But at the same time, they commit this horrific crime. So they're kind of on a knife's edge between victim and monster. And I think that this type of discomfort is something that fascinates modern audiences.
Veronica, Severin, The Devil's Bath is a period movie, but what do you think it says about the modern world? Severin, let's start with you.
Yeah, I think like what Kathy said about why the phenomenon is so fascinating is totally true, but still, like, I think as who we are as directors, that wouldn't have been enough because we don't think of ourselves as, let's say, history teachers. So we only wanted to do a film if we could feel a strong connection to today. And actually, we did this through those interrogation protocols, as we mentioned. This woman that we mainly based the case upon, it's an Austrian case of Eva Litzelfellner. When we read those very detailed transcripts, we got the feeling that she's sort of a perfectionist, you would say nowadays, who slipped into depression because she just thought she couldn't be good enough. She couldn't fulfill the expectations that society had in her. She had mental health issues, but nobody could help her. Nobody would accept because there are no physical symptoms. Nobody could accept that she was actually sick. And that's like all of those things I think are still very relevant today. And it's still something that we want to talk about and need to talk about. And that was the great case of a phenomenon in history that's really interesting to a public, but still it also talks about today.
Plus, if I may add something, she was an kind of an immigrant because she only moved like 17 kilometers from one village to the other because she got married like in a different village than she came from, and she just could not adapt to how the people live there, or like she could not fulfill their expectations of how to work or how to function. And I think this is also a very modern theme. You need to function in our world, and if you don't function, you are kind of a failure, and you're kind of to pl and society tells you you are to blame yourself instead of changing the conditions.
Veronica, your film is now Austria's official entrant for the 2025 Academy Awards. How would you characterize the difference between Austrian audiences and American film audiences?
That's an interesting question because we love American film audiences. In Austria, like that's a it's a highly educated country when it comes to theater and classical music and opera, but film isn't still considered as being such a great art. And when you come to actually to the States and to talk to audiences here, kind of to ordinary people, it's interesting because they are very educated. They understand even films in a better way than the Austrians do. So that's kind of a, I don't know.
I think like Austrian audiences are sometimes very reserved. So they're sitting in the cinema and they want to look for mistakes. They want to find stuff that they don't like about the movie and they never really open up to it. And that's totally different in the United States, where you really have the feeling people they want to open up and they want to experience something when going to a cinema. And that's actually like for us the perfect audience and also how we feel about it, because like when we go to cinema, we want to experience something and we want to be challenged and we want to learn something new about the world.
Well, we do have some picky critics here in the States too, but I think that certainly this film is catching on. It's building resonance. Severin, what do you hope audiences take away from this story?
I think it's like a friend of ours who's a film director was asked like what message he wanted to give with his film, and he answered, "I don't give messages. I'm no postman," which is a quote that we really like. It's not so much about delivering this one message. I mean, I think it's about asking questions, and as Veronica said, I think we need to question ourselves as a society, because what the film says, I think, is not that there is one or two bad guys to blame for our lead character's condition, but it's basically the society that all of us created that put such an amount of pressure on her that basically breaks her. And I think it's the same today. And I think we need to ask ourselves if the place we're living in, the society we created, if that's actually a good one and a healthy one for everybody involved. And what we feel like also like about our lead character in the film, or about Agnes, as she's called, she's a artistically talented person, but nobody at that time the film is set could see that. She's very musically talented in a way. She hears music where other people only hear noise. So that could have been a talent, but it's overlooked by everybody around her. And I think that's still true for today. I think some people whom we consider as failures just because they don't fulfill our expectations are really talented in other regards. And I think we need to be open, and we need to open up and see the talents of people instead the failure to fulfill our expectations in them. I think we need to be more open-minded and yeah, see the beauty in other people.
Kathy, just in our last 30 seconds, you at UC Davis and staff have created lots of programming around your book and this film. Tomorrow, there's going to be a lecture, screening, and panel discussion. What do you want people to look forward to?
Well, so I want you to come to the Manetti Schrem Museum at 4 p.m., where Veronica and Severine are going to talk about how you actually bring a historical topic to film, because that's a whole process which we as historians are actually not familiar with, and it's quite fascinating. And then there's going to be a panel discussion with them and with me subsequent to their lecture. And then at 8:15 p.m. in Cruz Hall, there's going to be the screening of the movie, followed by a panel discussion with Veronica Severin and me, moderated by my colleague, Hugh Kim, who is an expert actually on horror films and on film in general. So it should be a very interesting show. And I look forward to bringing it to Sacramento and Davis audiences and UC Davis students.
Kathy, Stuart, thank you for coming on Insight.
Thank you.
Veronica, Severin, we appreciate your time today, and best of luck with getting this film in the Oscars.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Kathy Stewart is a UC Davis professor of history and author of the book Suicide by Proxy in Early Modern Germany, Crime, Sin, and Salvation. Austrian filmmakers Veronica Franz and Severin Fiala adapted Kathy's book into a new film entitled The Devil's Bath. Coming up next, we explore how the show One Degree of Separation blends comedy with vulnerability to shed light on depression and suicide, turning personal struggles into powerful storytelling and laughs. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. We're back in just a moment.